Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Premier Perinatal Safety Initiative Phase 1 Results Conference Call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded today, Wednesday, December 5th, 2012. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Mr. Blair Childs, Senior Vice President of Public Affairs with Premier Healthcare Alliance. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody. We're really excited to have everyone participating in this release of the findings from an important collaborative that's been focused on reducing birth-related harm. Just by way of background, so everyone's clear, the Premier Alliance is an alliance of  2,700 hospitals and health systems, as well as 90,000 non-acute care sites. Premier is focused on using the power of collaboration to lead the transformation to high-quality, cost-effective healthcare. And this collaborative is a really terrific example of this kind of collaborative work. The way we're going to proceed today is we will start off with an overview presentation on the results that we found from this collaborative, which will be presented by Susan DeVore, President and CEO of Premier. Following Susan will be Tiffany Kenny. Tiffany is with Summa Health Systems and is the informatics administrator in women's health services for the women's health services program. Following Tiffany will be Dr. Philip Rauch, who's with the University of Minnesota, and Becky Gams, who's also with the University of Minnesota Amplants Children's Hospital. And then following all the presenters, who will go one after another, we'll open it up for Q&A from the phone lines. So with that, let me turn it over to Susan DeVore.
Thanks, Blair. Hi, everybody. Glad to have you with us today. And, you know, this topic for me and for all of you, I'm sure, is a very emotional and personal one. I'm part of a very big family. I have 6 brothers and sisters and 35 nieces and nephews, and I'm a grandmother and a parent. And, I think this is a very important topic. I also just had the opportunity yesterday to go to the funeral of the daughter of a friend of mine, who died as a result of an ectopic pregnancy. And so this is very personal, and while serious adverse events don't often happen, and they are rare, when they do, it's devastating to the patients, to the families, to everyone around them. And so I think the importance of this work really can't be understated. In addition to all of the devastating effects that occur when something does go wrong, there are all sorts of costs associated with complications that happen during deliveries. Our data would indicate that maternal admissions with complications cost twice as much as those without. And if you look at just the hospital cost alone, we think that's a price tag of $17 billion. It increases the length of stay for patients and mothers and babies in hospitals by 68%. Perinatal harm also increases liability. We all know that. You've all seen and read about the verdicts of more than $20 million. You probably know that more than 50% of OBGYNs will be sued by the age of 40. And what that is causing is, significant trends in health systems and hospitals nationwide, making changes to how and even if they practice or offer birthing services. For example, across the state of Pennsylvania, there's been a net loss of 43 hospital obstetric units over the last several years. And in the Philadelphia area alone, 20 hospital maternity units have closed since 1997. So with that, we decided as a group, together with some of our health systems, many years ago, to try to do work in this area. When this was launched, there was little evidence and few scientifically designed initiatives that existed on the relationship between improved patient safety and a reduction in adverse obstetrical events and liability. So we launched this in 2008. We have data that comes from malpractice claims and information through the Liability Insurer American Excess Insurance Exchange, or AEIX. It's managed by Premier Insurance Management Services, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of Premier. And these hospitals that decided to do this work together realized that perinatal harm drives up to 50% of the liability expense for many hospitals. And so we went to work on what would be an idealized design for perinatal care. We did this together with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement and initially with Ascension Health. And the goals of this collaborative were really to, one, significantly lower the incidence of infrequent but serious preventable injuries. Two, to better define preventable perinatal harm. Three, to identify the care practices that could result in improved outcomes. And four, to try to measure the financial value of these care improvements to include evaluation of claims information and determine if harm reductions led to fewer claims and less costly payouts. As you see there on page five, it is one of the largest, most sophisticated perinatal initiatives to date. In this phase one, we had 145,000 births. We have a diverse group of participants, so we have multiple geographies, different sizes and locations of facilities, teaching and non-teaching, and we had access to detailed liability claims data from AEIX. If you look at the timeline for the initiative itself, you know, the baseline period is the 2006-2008 period. The phase one of this initiative is 2008 to 2010. Those are the results we're talking about today. We have continued this work, and phase two of this initiative will be complete at the end of 2012, and we will be doing all the analytics into 2013, and we'll report out the continuing results. So you can see here the timeline. It's a very significant level of work. It involves multiple facilities and locations. You've got a couple of those folks today on the call to talk to you about what results they're seeing. It is important to note, I think, that filing a lawsuit is not always an indicator of whether harm actually occurred or that something did something wrong. And it's also important to note that liability claims are usually filed within 2 years of birth, sometimes take several years to resolve. But what we wanted to see is how would we start this work and would we see improvement in compliance with the protocols and evidence associated with care delivery, and would that start to have an effect on liability claims? We, on page seven there, you see the process that we're using and some of the techniques that we're using. We've drawn from things that have been developed by the military, which involve how do teams work together and how do teams bring the information they need, the people, the resources quickly to solve challenges in care delivery. We also have adopted and been using throughout the collaborative the situation background assessment process, which has been used by the U.S. Navy Nuclear Submarine Service. And the idea is to practice the communication efforts with all people involved so that there is a lot of experience with it, a lot of training associated with it, and words mean the same things in various situations. And a really important part of this is also the simulation activity that's been occurring in our hospitals and health systems, where teams prepare for sort of the worst-case scenarios. They practice on mannequins. And so in real life, when some of these situations occur, it's not the first time they've responded to it. They've been through it before, and they've been through very serious simulations. You'll hear more about that later as well. If you move to the next page, page eight, The power and the tools that we've brought forward in this collaborative also relate to the consistent use of care bundles and increasing the adherence to the evidence-based care bundles. We have a lot of individual hospitals and individual practices that have followed these care practices. The challenge for us is, how do you do this systematically across the health system, and how do you do it systematically across multiple hospitals in multiple geographies? Requirements for each of the bundles, and you see the three basic bundles here, are different, but they have the same objective, which is, how do we standardize the clinical process, and how do we reduce variation in the practices? The scoring is done in sort of an all-or-none fashion, so that in order to get credit for having done it, all elements of the bundle have to be done. So let me give you an example. The goal of the augmentation care bundle is to reduce the risk associated with augmenting labor, particularly the use of the drug oxytocin, which is commonly used to accelerate a slow labor. This bundle has four elements that must be used consistently. And if a team neglects to document an estimate of the fetal weight, for example, before administering the medication, it would not receive credit for the work, even if they successfully implemented the three other elements of the bundle. So looking at page 9, you can see the bundle results, and you can see very significant improvement by the participants in the care bundle compliance. You can see there the augmentation bundle, the elective induction bundle, the vacuum bundle, and, you know, improvements from 33% compliance to 72%, from 58% to 88%, and from 9 to 51%. This work is continuing, and through May of 2012, we continue to see improvements in the compliance with all three of these care bundles. We'll share some of those details next year. If you go to the next page and say, well, how is this compliance with the bundles affecting harm and the outcomes? And what we can see from the data is that there has been a 25% reduction in birth hypoxia and asphyxia, which can cause infant brain damage, a 22% reduction in neonatal birth trauma. And for just these 14 hospitals over this short period of time, there have been 30 fewer babies that have experienced these harms. And so we think the work is indicating to us that there is definitely something to care compliance with the bundles and better outcomes. If you go on to the next slide, we also have looked at maternal harm. And we've seen a reduction in cardiac arrest and cardiac complications and postpartum hemorrhage, as you can see here in the charts, and 78 fewer mothers, given the 14 hospitals in the multiple geographies have experienced these harms. So we, again, think that the work is very important and that it is leading us to better outcomes, even in an environment where the CDC is reporting that postpartum hemorrhage rates have doubled among U.S. women between 1998 and 2009. If you go to the next page and ask the question, well, is this having any effect on claims and liability claims? And what that first chart indicates to you is that we can actually see in this cohort of hospitals a decrease in liability claims filed per delivery by 39%. Now, there's been a 10% decrease in non-participating hospitals, but a significant difference and a higher reduction in liability claims with these participants. As importantly, or more importantly, these participants have resolved 67% of the claims without payment at the end of this first phase of work versus 12% during that baseline period. So all indications are that if you implement these systematic processes, if you can get compliance with the care bundles, it is leading to lower incidence of harm for both mother and baby, and it is leading to a resolution of claims without payment and a lower level of claims filed. Now, there is a time lag, as we said before, so it's, you know, maybe too premature to draw all the conclusions from this work, but the work would indicate to us that we need to keep going and we need to keep driving this kind of improvement. So in summary, and I'm going to turn it over here in a minute to some of the folks who are on the phone with us, the evidence suggests that high-reliability healthcare teams can prevent birth injuries. We have prevented approximately 110 additional harms to mothers and babies. 106,000 mothers and babies have gotten all of the evidence-based quality measures. We've reduced harm by 25%, and we've got more to come as this work continues. And as I started at the beginning and said, I'm a mother and a grandmother. My daughter-in-law is expecting in February. I was at dinner with my daughter-in-law who told me that her physician wanted to do her C-section at 38 weeks. And it begot this conversation between she and I about why would you do it at 38 weeks and why did the physician want to do it. And so I think we just have to know the questions to ask, and we just have to have the data and evidence that would indicate there are some best practices here that we want to replicate nationally. So with that, I am going to turn it over to Tiffany Kenny, who's going to talk to you about their experience at SUMA.
Morning, everyone. This is Tiffany. Thanks for this opportunity to share our story. SUMA Health System has been a top performer in the Premier Perinatal Safety Initiative. That's because we've used a team approach and strong leadership to establish quality interventions that improve safety, like a standardized consent form, a peer review process, hard stops at the point of scheduling inappropriate procedures, a new simulation program, which I'll show you more in a minute, and an innovative scorecard for our doctors and midwives that shows them how they're doing with all of our quality metrics. Phase one results have shown a reduction in the most severe cases of perinatal harm at SUMA. While these are rare, they have long-term consequences that are serious and costly and very traumatic to the family and their caregivers as well, like birth trauma, which can include nerve or brain damage. While we already had a lower-than-average rate, we improved it by 72%. Here's a video clip of one of our simulations performed on our labor and delivery unit. The purpose of a simulation is to practice emergencies and improve our team communication. And you can go ahead and play the clip, Alvin.
Yeah, you know, I my apologies. It looks like the clip is not going to play on this system, but I do have a link to it, and I will absolutely send it to all the folks on the call. So all apologies here. We thought we had it set, but it did not translate over.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Elective delivery less than 39 weeks, like Susan alluded to with her daughter's experience, that's a national marker of quality care. And this is a delivery for convenience reasons like discomfort or the doctor you like happens to be on call that day. Babies delivered before 39 weeks are at a higher risk for needing a ventilator to breathe or need intensive special care. So a lower rate is better. And we've eliminated elective delivery less than 39 weeks, with September being our 31st month at zero, using a hard stop at the point of scheduling and a consent form that outlines the risk of the procedure to the patient and their provider. And from here on, you're going to see some citations at the bottom of our slides. We've done quite a bit of publication in our clinical journals of how we've done all this work. We've also lowered our C-section rate for low-risk first-time mothers. Here, a lower rate is also better. Cesareans are more risky for the mom and baby than a vaginal birth. And in 2009, we were at almost 30%. But in 2010, we lowered the rate to 24.7%. And that 5% decrease is substantial. That also put us well below the state average for Ohio of 27.4%. Too many contraction cuts off blood flow to the baby and puts the mom at risk for postpartum hemorrhage, which you've heard is the leading cause of maternal death. Too many contractions is called tachysystole, which is often caused by oxytocin, or commonly known as Pitocin or PIT. That's a high alert medication used to start or stimulate labor. We created an algorithm or a step-by-step system for the caregivers to improve the safety of contraction management. We've tracked this monthly and reached high levels of compliance that you can see in our graph here. We've published our algorithm and shared it with many hospitals across the country. And this publication actually won the Best of the Journal of Obstetric, Gynecologic, and Neonatal Nurses for the year 2011. We've also improved harm related to elective inductions of labor. And this is when you start labor for convenience reasons. And while these still occur at SUMA, they are on more appropriate women with better outcomes now. So, for example, fewer women are electively induced when their cervix is not ready, or we call that unfavorable. Like in 2010, in the first half, we had 40, and we cut that more than 50% down to 17 in the first half of 2012. We've also had fewer elective inductions on first-time mothers or nulliparas. And the C-section rate of our elective inductions went from 10 per half down to 1. We've also cut the time for inductions from the start of it to delivery almost in half, from 15 to 8 hours. And fewer women bleed too much, and fewer babies have needed to go to our special care nursery. And that went from 5 down to 2. So that's over 50% as well. Elective inductions have been the biggest financial drain in our department because we get paid the same, although these women are here longer and use more resources. We did a study on this, and we found a statistically significant difference between women that meet the bundle criteria and have a cervix that's favorable already and those that don't. So when the cervix was favorable, we lost $423 compared to $2,600 when the cervix was not ready. So they're 6 times more costly. So since we've learned this, we've hard stopped elective inductions on an unfavorable cervix, and we've published these results. And this is significant because we're advancing the current bundle criteria and setting the bar higher for better outcomes. More importantly, it's just the right thing to do for our women and infants. So I'd like now to hand off to Dr. Philip Rauch of the University of Minnesota.
Thank you very much. So we began the rollout of the Premier Initiative here at Fairview Healthcare System using the Zero Birth Injury Initiative trademark here. This was our first steps were to begin the process through a multidisciplinary approach with all Fairview system, including 5 hospitals, 2 of which were presenters in the Phase 1 project, Ridges Hospital and the University of Minnesota Medical Center. This is a broad scope approach using maternal fetal medicine specialists, obstetricians, our family practice colleagues, neonatologists, certified midwives that perform approximately 40% of our deliveries, and our advanced practice nurses. We also engaged full support from administration. The purpose of this initiative, which was the Premier Initiative, was to improve perinatal processes and clinical outcomes, implement an entire set of evidence-based education bundles, guidelines, and order sets to fully integrate the entire project into the care of all of our patients, with the ultimate goal of reducing and ultimately eliminating preventable birth injuries. Fairview Healthcare System early successes were that we experienced far fewer infant birth injuries. You'll see the numbers on this slide here. We had a 10.5% decline in birth injuries with over $39,000 cost savings to the system. As well as maternal birth injuries, 75 cases were reduced with a 15% reduction and a cost of over $112,000. So in the early stages of our initiative, we are experiencing market reductions in both maternal injury and infant injury, resulting in over $150,000 in cost savings to the system. We have had some challenges. We have been performing in-situ simulations before the onset of the Premier Initiative as early as 2006, and we continue to roll this out to all providers and all staff, and this is an ongoing process. We have noted steady improvement in bundle compliance since implementation, and I'll show you that data, but we're working hard to achieve over 95% compliance with all of the bundles. Two of our hospitals recently actually met the national benchmark for adverse outcome index in quarter one of 2012, reducing overall harm to mothers and babies across the system. We've also experienced some challenges recently in further reducing AOI to new benchmark levels, and we're working on that. We've introduced a healthy environment initiative to help support our in-situ simulations and team steps work, so the culture of great patient care extends throughout all of the workforce in our hospitals. And we're also continuing to sustain the improvement through a very vigorous peer review process of all adverse outcomes, with bringing information and education back to staff and providers such that adverse outcomes continue to be reduced. These are the slides showing our bundle compliance from 2010 to the current first available quarter in quarter two of 2012. And the top one is a augmentation bundle, the middle one is elective induction bundle, and the last one is the vacuum bundle. We've noticed extreme strides in getting our bundle compliance from 60% up to over 90% with augmentation as well as the elective induction bundle, and we're virtually at zero elective inductions without through our entire system of over 10,000 deliveries. Our vacuum bundle is a true success story in that this bundle is quite complex and very difficult for providers to reach compliance. And as you can see from our graph, we've had a steady increase to reach our goal of over 90% compliance with this bundle. The data then, as a result of compliance with this bundle, is that we've significantly reduced our term neonatal intensive care unit admissions from 8 per 1,000 down to 6 per 1,000. This is a significant reduction in term newborns going to the NICU. We also have had a dramatic decrease in our overall birth trauma cases from around 1.7 per 1,000, which was a very low number to start with, down to 0.8 per 1,000 since the initiation of this initiative. In addition, overall adverse outcomes have dropped dramatically across our entire system. This reflects all five of our hospitals in participation. We had a dramatic decrease from the beginning of the process all the way down now to significant continued reductions in adverse outcomes. And as I said, two of our sites have reached the national benchmark adverse outcome index. I'd like to turn it over to Becky Gans to discuss one of our in-situ simulation stories.
So this is Becky Gans. I'm the advanced practice nurse leader here at the University of Minnesota Medical Center, Fairview, and the University of Minnesota AMPLES Children's Hospital, and thank you for inviting us to participate in this call today. What I have the extreme honor of presenting to you today is a story about one of our families, and as a result of our in-situ simulation practices at one of our hospitals, we were able to save the life of one of our patient's babies. So this is a story of a prolapse cord, and you'll see a picture of the baby in the picture, and then her mom and dad in the picture on the right-hand side. So baby Olivia actually got to participate in the simulation. So her mother and Olivia participated in a simulation. Her mother is the nurse manager at Fairview Northland Hospital in Princeton, Minnesota, and she was a participant in the simulation as the mother with a prolapse cord. And what they learned through this simulation is that they really need to pull their resources together quickly in order to save babies' lives. And a prolapse cord is when the umbilical cord prolapses or is delivered before the baby. And so anytime that that baby is pushing on that cord, the oxygen is interrupted to that baby. And as you can imagine, that baby can die from that situation with the lack of oxygen. So what they learned from this scenario is that as more people came into the situation and realized that they had a prolapse cord and they had a low heart tones, they were calling the obstetrician, but no one was really willing to call the emergency code so that they could go back to the operating room and get ready for the surgeon. They were waiting for the surgeon to come to the delivery and make the call himself. And so what they learned is that anyone on the team can call a code C-section. The surgeon actually has to make the call for the incision, but the surgeon was so thankful to go through this scenario so that he could tell his team, hey, get all the resources together, meet me back in the operating room. You have just saved this patient 4 or 5 minutes of time, and we were able to save this baby's life. So this is a picture of Olivia and her mom and dad, and it's a great success story within our hospital. And what's interesting is that the mom and the baby who participated in the simulation actually had this happen to them later on, which is not how we would typically plan that. And the next slide will describe another important phase that we've been working on at Fairview, standardizing the second stage of labor. And we had various hospitals practicing laboring down, but what we wanted to do is standardize this across the system so that we had particular criteria in place, as well as length of time that we would allow women to labor down and the ongoing assessments that we needed to make for those women. So what we did is we included both first-time moms and moms with multiple births, and we developed a guideline to manage that second stage. In that one of our hospitals, we had a 50% decrease in the use of vacuums with patients with an epidural, and of those women, we also had a decrease length in the second stage of active pushing time of 36% without increasing the overall length of the second stage of labor. So that when you decrease that active pushing time, moms are not as tired, and then they have a greater satisfaction with their labor experience. All of our Fairview hospitals have implemented the second stage of labor management guideline. The University of Minnesota Medical Center is in the middle of collecting and analyzing our data, but we're also collecting it at all 5 sites, so we'll have a great sample size to report back about the success of this guideline. And then the final slide talks about other things that we are currently working on. So with the perinatal bundles, that really helps us standardize our practices for the management of the first stage of labor. And then I've just described to you the management of the second stage of labor. Now we're looking at the third stage of labor to include management of postpartum hemorrhage and delayed cord clamping. And again, these are some things that we're already actively practicing, but we wanted to standardize the practices across the system among all of our providers. We're also doing further investigation into maternal and newborn injuries outside of the bundles. How much of the bundles are really impacting our AOI, and what other things can we do outside of the bundles to impact the adverse outcomes in our patients? We're looking at a massive transfusion guideline across the system, and again, that goes along with the increase in postpartum hemorrhages that are being noted across the country. But again, as Susan noted, that with the work of this group, we're having decreased postpartum hemorrhages. We're also looking at other ways to increase the speed that we immobilize our resources with OB rapid response teams. We've applied for a failure modes and effective analysis grant, which uses simulations to further look at our processes and improve quality for our patients. And then we're also collecting data on a larger scale. We've been speaking locally and nationally, including the A1 conferences. And then we've been in discussions with the development of a second stage of labor management guideline bundle with the IHI.
Great, Becky. Thank you very much. I think this has been a terrific presentation demonstrating how standardization makes a difference, and then furthering identifying best practices and then sharing them across as a collaborative, and again, continuing to improve performance, which is the goal of all this. And as Susan mentioned, we'll be sharing additional data in next year at some point, but we thought this was significant, what we've developed thus far, and wanted to get it out for people to understand. So with that, Nadir, if you could announce how people can ask questions, if anyone has questions. There have been very thorough presentations. Please do so.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. And if you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. Once again, to register for a question, please press 1-4. Our first question is coming from the line of Cheryl Clark. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to repeat a question I had asked before, even though the previous answer was great. I just thought it would be good to get a little more information about the fact that we had a recession and we had a drop-off in births, and presuming that we had also a drop-off in women getting pregnant who might have had riskier labor and delivery processes, whether that might have impacted your stats at all. I noted that in the other hospitals, the non-participating hospitals, there was a reduction in adverse events of, I think it was, to 10%. Can you just clarify that for me a little bit?
This is Susan, and I have Les Meredith on the call as well, but what you said is correct, which is we're not sure with any certainty what's happening at the other hospitals around the nation, but we did see a 10% reduction, maybe for the factors that you cited related to the recession and other things. I think the important fact is that we saw a 39% reduction in these participating hospitals, and we think that delta has a lot to do with this work that they're doing.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Cheryl, is that complete? Good.
Yeah. I mean, you wonder if there might have been a select population that, there might have been a healthier population, if you will.
It's actually interesting, Cheryl, because while we've seen the 10% reduction, there's also some other information out that would indicate that, the level of obesity and diabetes and some of the other challenges that we have might have made the population actually more at risk. So we see data both ways, and we see articles and information supposing both things. And so I think, what we try to do just is compare the reduction in harm and the improvement in the compliance from the non-participating hospitals.
Very good. Thanks.
Excellent. Nadurs, any other questions?
We currently don't have any further questions registered at this time.
Okay. Let's wait a moment and just see if anybody else queues up. Just in reference to Cheryl's question, any of the folks from either SUMA or Fairview have any thoughts on that or comments on populations that you've seen?
This is Dr. Rauch. Certainly the other thing to consider in a recession is loss of work and loss of insurance in some circumstances and lag in insurance, such that although I can't comment on the exact number, there are more patients that have lapses in insurance with lapses in prenatal care. And certainly that does impact perinatal outcomes significantly when prenatal care does have a lapse. And I think during this period we could also say that some patients might be at increased risk for this reason alone.
Excellent point. Any other questions, Nadir?
We currently don't have any questions at this time.
Okay. Well, let's. I think everybody has access to the link to the white paper that we put together. We put out a press release. And if you have any additional questions, please contact Alvin Weil. You have his contact information. He can put you in touch with our speakers if you have further need to discuss any of this with them. But I wanted to thank all of the participants for excellent presentations. This is important work. We're proud of the progress that we've been able to make, and we're looking forward to continuing that progress, as you've heard, and reporting out on that, on what we learn in the coming months. So with that, unless there are any other questions that have come up, Nadir, any other questions?
speaker, and if people have any questions, sir.
I'd like to thank everybody for participating, and we have a wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.